Greetings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, compounding pharmacies can be a lifesaver for patients with unique needs or when commercial medicines are unavailable. But their growing popularity and lack of traditional regulation has raised concerns about safety and efficacy. Now the industry is stepping up to defend itself. Also this morning, we're getting a recap of last night's forum between the candidates hoping to be the next representative of the 83rd District in the Ohio House. For anyone with a suspended driver's license, the Findlay Municipal Court is holding another clinic to help resolve those issues and get you back on the road legally. And it's the most wonderful time of the year, the Christmas in October Craft Show, returns to the Hancock County Fairgrounds this weekend. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Tuesday, October 1st, 2024. I tell you what, it has already been a rough week. I mean, over the weekend, we heard about the passing of Kris Kristofferson, Dame Maggie Smith, John Ashton, we were talking about yesterday from Beverly Hills Cop. Dikembe Mutombo passed away. I learned that yesterday. I just heard about that. The great basketball player. Pete Rose was a bit of a shock, to say the least. I heard that yesterday evening. And, of course, Findlay native Gavin Creel, Broadway star, and just an all-around great guy, and just gone too far too soon. It's already been a rough week, and it is only Tuesday. So, my goodness. But we carry on, and we move forward. Couple of items here among the first things you need to know this morning. The most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. Ohio's minimum wage set to increase the first of the year. We are into the fourth quarter of the year now, beginning of October. And come January, the minimum wage in the Buckeye State will rise from $10.45 to $10.70 an hour for non-tipped employees. And for tipped employees, the minimum wage increases from $5.25 to $5.35. You recall, back in 2006, Ohio voters approved a constitutional amendment which allows for the state's minimum wage to be increased each year according to the rate of inflation. So that is the new number when the calendar turns over to 2025 in the state of Ohio. Interesting. Another Ohio-related story that I thought was kind of interesting. New Sheetz gas station opening in Toledo today. Actually, in Springfield Township. It is on Door Street, the second store to open in the Toledo area. Sheetz previously announced it had plans to open 8 stores in the Toledo area. The new store, expected to bring more than 24 jobs to the area, be open 24/7, 365 days a year. And of course, significant because Findlay was kind of be the hub of the convenience store, the Sheetz convenience store operation in Ohio and around the region. But they're opening up the second store in the Toledo area today. Interesting. Let's see what else is going on that we have to talk about this morning. We're going to get a Sheetz here in Findlay, a retail location in Findlay. The what is it? The racetrack location looks like it's about to open 99 and I-75. And getting really close. And I've heard a lot of people say, how many new gas stations we need? So many of them are opening these days. But we love our road trips in this country. We're a nation of automobiles. We're a nation on the move. And that may be a very good thing. As it turns out, a new study out of Edith Cowan University in Australia has found that traveling could help slow the aging process. How about this? Because when you travel, you are engaging with nature, you get mental stimulation, you are socializing with others, more than likely, and these are all things associated with living longer. The lead author of the study for Edith Cowan University in Australia says tourism isn't just about leisure and recreation. It also plays an important role in individual and public health. And because we are engaging in all of these activities that we know are associated with living longer when we go on vacation, the long and short of it is we need to travel more. So, there we go. It is a good thing that we are on the move. I thought it was kind of interesting. Let's see. The next time you go to the bank, be aware that you may have a lower limit on your deposits. At least, well, now I should back up a little bit because I set that up wrong. I said when you go to the bank, you may find that you have a lower limit on your deposits, and that's not necessarily the case. Apparently, some banks, not all, but some banks are lowering the limits for mobile deposits. Because nowadays, you have your banking app on your phone, you can deposit checks right there just by snapping a photo and submitting it to the bank. They turn it into an electronic check, and you can just, you don't have to actually go to the bank. You can all just do it right there with your mobile device. But because of an increase in check fraud, and this was in the news just a couple of weeks ago, people, and I guess there was this viral video online of people doing this, and so it became a disturbing trend, people trying to fool their bank by depositing a fake check, as if that wasn't a crime, as if you weren't going to get in trouble for it. Well, now it's trickling down, and everybody is paying the price. Because of the increase in the number of check fraud incidents that banks are confronted with, some are lowering their limits on mobile deposits. As a matter of fact, Fidelity Investments has dramatically cut the limit from $100,000. You could do a mobile deposit for up to $100,000 before. Now it's only $1,000. So that is a huge decrease for certain customers. It says, after this trending scheme resulted in a number of bad checks being cashed, Fidelity spokesperson said, we recently identified individuals attempting to commit fraud using their Fidelity accounts, and we have zero tolerance for any type of illegal activity. So, bottom line, just a few bad apples ruin it for everyone. You may discover that you are dramatically limited as to how much you can deposit via your mobile device into your bank account. So just something to keep in mind here. And lastly here this morning, among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, a new analysis of data is revealing the states with the highest average IQ. This is fun. The states with the highest average IQ, the average intelligent quotient score worldwide is 100. So we use that as kind of the benchmark, the baseline number. The average IQ worldwide is about 100. In this country, state by state, Massachusetts has the highest average with a score of 104.3. Now, part of that is, they say, probably because Massachusetts is the home of Harvard University and a very learned state. And so high intelligence is quite valued. And that may, and of course, it's a generally very wealthy state. And so, you know, that may be contributing it to it as well. And Massachusetts, number one. New Hampshire, close behind at 104.2 on average. On the other hand, 20 states fall below that global average of 100. At the very bottom of the list, Mississippi, with an average IQ of 94.2. And Louisiana with an average score of 95.3. So those two are at the bottom. So It's Massachusetts, New Hampshire at the top, Mississippi and Louisiana at the bottom. And in case you wondered, I did look it up. Ohio is at 101.8 on average. So above the worldwide average and near the top of, I don't know where we rank overall in the state-by-state breakdown. I didn't go that deep into it, but Ohio is at 101.8, while Michigan is at 100.5. So we are a full point plus higher than Michigan. Now, it says here in the report, it should be noted that IQ testing does not account for every type of intelligence a person can have. But that sounds like something that someone in Michigan might say, you know? No, knowing that we're a full point higher than they are, that's exactly what somebody in Michigan would say. So that was the long and short of it there, is that Ohio people definitively, according to the research, I mean, I'm not making this up. This is not subjective. This is factual. Researched information. This is science, people. That Ohioans are smarter than Michiganders. Just throw that out there. There you go. Some of the most interesting, and but that's a story that makes your day. Even if you learn nothing else today, that make your day. The most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Tuesday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchak. Your WTOL 11 weather. Partly cloudy today, a chance of showers, a high in the mid-70s. Partly cloudy tonight, a low around 50. Findlay City Schools is stressing the importance of the income tax levy that voters in the school district will see on their fall ballot. On November 5th, voters in Findlay City Schools will decide whether to approve a 1% earned income tax levy for the purpose of paying current expenses. Superintendent Dr. Andy Hatton.
30% of our citizens are on fixed incomes. So an earned income tax will not impact things like Social Security, pensions. A lot of things that would be in a traditional tax is not in an earned income tax.
He says Findlay City Schools has extended the last operating levy 19 and a half years, which means they're paying 2024 bills with $2,004. Get more information on the income tax levy in this story on our website. A longtime firefighter for the Perrysburg Township Fire Department has died of occupational cancer.
Troy Bernhard was a 28-year veteran of the department and leaves behind a wife and two children. Occupational cancer is the leading cause of death among firefighters. They have a 9% greater risk of being diagnosed with cancer compared to the general public.
WTOL 11's Sophia Paracone reporting. In honor of Bernhard's life, the governor has ordered flags lowered upon all public buildings and grounds throughout Wood County, the Ohio State House, the Vern Reif Center, and the Rhodes State Office Tower until sunset on the day of his funeral, October 5th. The city of Findlay has several road construction projects ongoing this week. Among the projects, Garfield Avenue will be closed to through traffic from North Main Street to the railroad for water line replacement. South Blanchard Street will be closed to through traffic from 6th Street to Pearl Street for water line installation. And Washington Avenue will be closed to through traffic from 6th Street to Olive Street for storm sewer installation. See a full list of projects in the story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online at WFIN.com.
Well, of course, most consumers are familiar with how traditional pharmacies operate, but far fewer are aware of what compounding pharmacies do. These are specialized pharmacies whose primary job is to create tailored medications under the supervision of a physician to meet the specific and unique needs of individual patients. It is a critical role in the medical and pharmacological industry, but it does not come without controversy and some risk. Joining us this morning is Sean Nourian. He is CEO and founder of Empower Pharmacy. And Sean, yours is one of, if not the largest compounding pharmacy in the United States, but not the only one. How common are these operations?
That's a good question. You know, compounding has been around since the beginning of time. And only a century ago, approximately 75% of all prescriptions dispensed in our country were compounded.
Yeah.
because of the industrialization of pharmaceutical manufacturing that occurred throughout the 20th century, now, today, compounding pharmacies make up approximately 2% of all the prescriptions dispensed in our country. But that figure is growing as more patients and healthcare providers grasp the benefits that compounded medicines provide.
And certainly 2% of all of the prescriptions that are filled in this country still represents a very large number. And as we mentioned, the primary job is to create these tailored medications meeting specific and unique needs of an individual patient. Why are these necessary? Give us some examples of what that might entail.
Unlike commercial FDA-approved medications that you see advertised on TV, compounded medications tailor the ingredients to fit individual needs, which are particularly important for those with unique health challenges. For example, when a patient has an allergy to a component in the commercial medication, such as a dye, binder, filler, or other inactive ingredient, the prescriber can work with a compounding pharmacy to formulate a new drug that does not contain these allergens. So then the patient can have a better treatment outcome. Another example is when a patient may be needle phobic and the only commercially available medication comes as an injection.
Mm-hmm.
And so then the prescriber can work with a compounding pharmacy to create a different dosage form, like a transdermal cream that the patient can become more, ensure they are compliant with. Another example is when a large pharmaceutical manufacturer can no longer produce a drug profitably and then orphans that drug. But many patients are still dependent on it. Compounding pharmacies can then step in and make these drugs for the rest of that patient's life. Another reason compounding pharmacies are useful is when a drug is on back order or is on the FDA shortage list.
Mm-hmm.
And then compounding pharmacies being the only other legal avenue to be able to procure these types of medications, we can quickly add additional capacity to the supply chain, so that patients don't have to go out without the medication until the manufacturer gets their manufacturing facilities and capacity back up online.
So to clarify here, we're still talking about prescription-based medications, but they exist outside of, as you were kind of alluding to, outside of the traditional FDA approval process, which in and of itself is concerning to some people. Explain how compounded medicine differs from an FDA-approved pharmaceutical product and why people shouldn't necessarily be afraid of that.
It's a great question. You know, the traditional FDA approval process involves up to 10 years and billions of dollars to get a product to market. With compounding pharmacies, we utilize drugs that have already been FDA approved, but it doesn't make sense for a patient that needs a drug immediately. And it's only one or maybe a handful of patients for a pharmaceutical company to spend billions of dollars and wait 10 years until that patient get their hands on that medication. For these reasons, the FDA has given an exemption to compounding pharmacies to be able to produce medications whenever a prescriber determines that a patient can have a better treatment outcome compared to a commercial medication that may not be able to meet the needs of that patient.
Now, you mentioned, and this is another significant role that compounding pharmacies play, is to make available medicines that are in short supply commercially. And as an example, most recently, medications like Ozempic and Wegovy fall into that category. But these are not exactly the same medications. Ozempic, for example, is patent protected, and they don't sell their active ingredient to compounding pharmacies such as yours and others. And again, because this is not an FDA-approved compound, that leads to concerns about safety and efficacy and also about dosing errors.
As compounding pharmacies, we source all of our active pharmaceutical ingredients from FDA-registered API, active pharmaceutical ingredient manufacturers, similarly to how Big Pharma does it. And because we're regulated by the FDA and each individual state board of pharmacy, we have to meet stringent quality requirements to be able to produce and supply medications to the U.S. pharmaceutical market. So while the FDA compounding pharmacies, our drugs haven't gone through the 10-year plus approval process.
Mm-hmm.
The FDA recognizes that there are instances where compounding pharmacies are maybe beneficial to a patient compared to when a commercial manufacturer is not able to meet those needs.
Yeah. We're just mentioning, we mentioned a couple of concerns that have been raised about compounding pharmacies and compounded medications. There are others, many of which you say are actually just myths, such as?
One of the most common myths is that, as you mentioned, compounded medications are unsafe. But the reality is, when prepared by a licensed and reputable compounding pharmacies, compounded medications can be safe and efficacious. To ensure that compounding pharmacies adhere to strict quality control procedures and utilize pharmaceutical-grade ingredients to make to meet the specific needs of these patients, we are highly regulated by our individual state boards as well as our federal regulator, the FDA. And that comes to the next myth, is that compounding pharmacies are not regulated. Nothing is further from the truth. You know, compounding pharmacies are subject to some of the strictest regulations of any industry, being that we are making drugs that are destined to be injected into people. And so we must follow the strictest guidelines from each individual state board of pharmacy, the FDA, and the United States Pharmacopeia, the standard setting organization for the United States, which of course has the strictest standards of any nation in the world. And then another myth is that compounding is outdated. And while the practice of compounding dates back centuries, modern compounding pharmacies such as ourselves, we utilize advanced techniques and state-of-the-art technology to create custom solutions that meet today's standards using today's technology.
Bottom line it for us here, as we mentioned, there are a lot of compounding pharmacies out there, and there is a lot of money involved in this that has to attract at least some bad actors. And that has to concern you as someone with a vested interest in the success of the compounding pharmaceutical industry. How can a patient verify that the medications they are receiving are quality products? And what are you doing to help educate the public to ensure that patients get get quality products, have access to that medication while avoiding the dangerous stuff that we know is likely out there?
Good question. And you know, like all industries, there are some players that have invest more into quality and innovation than others do. And, you know, to be able for a patient to understand which is which, it's important for patients to stick to trustworthy pharmacies that utilize safe and well-established compounding practices. One way for them to do that is to look for an accreditation for that compounding pharmacy. The one that is most recognized in our industry is known as PCAB accreditation, short for Pharmacy Compounding Accreditation Board. And in power, of course, we, being the largest, most advanced compounding pharmacy in the nation, we have the most advanced technology and utilize similar pharmaceutical processes and procedures, equipment, facilities, as you would, a patient would see if they were to utilize a traditional manufacturer. You know, so how we educate the public and ensure they have access to quality medication, you know, our pharmacy allows patients to speak directly to a pharmacist with any questions they may have about medications. We also provide educational information on our website at empowerpharmacy.com.
It is an important part of the equation. It is also a part that comes with a lot of questions for a lot of folks. And hopefully, maybe we have enlightened people this morning. Again, Sean Nourian is CEO and founder of Empower Pharmacy with us this morning. Sean, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
That was mine. Thanks for having me.
So in case you missed it yesterday evening, WFIN and the Findlay-Hancock County Chamber of Commerce hosted the second of our candidate forums ahead of the November general election, which is right around the corner now. Election day only a little over a month away, and of course, early voting begins next week. And last night we featured the two individuals hoping to become the next representative of the 83rd District in the Ohio House, Democrat Sheila Caressel and Republican Ty Matthews. Here was part of that exchange.
Let's get into some of the issues that will define the next term for the state legislature. The top item on the agenda for the next session will be the adoption of a new state budget. How personally will you approach that process, and what would your priorities be as those decisions are made? And we'll begin with Mr. Matthews.
Very personally. I've actually started studying up on this and have spent time in Columbus looking at the current projections of the state budget. And I tell you what, it's not looking good. We're going to have to start cutting some pennies here. And I've always been an advocate of that. Government spending equals inflation. And we all feel inflation right now. So in the budget process, we really need to look at what is the purpose of government and what is the government here to do. And again, I believe the spending is out of control. Also looking towards different ways we can incentivize certain businesses in our community. I'm proud to hopefully present here in the next upcoming week one of my initiatives, the Ohio Defense Initiative. And that's going to be a targeted effort to attract new industry into Northwest Ohio that is going to be circulated around and focused on the defense aspect of the military, looking at private defense, but also maybe getting some military installations here in Northwest Ohio. Looking forward to working on that and seeing what we can bring back here to our community. I've also been talking to community leaders, community advocates on what we need here in the 83rd District, and that next budget, I look forward to even working with 50 North if they have a project coming up. Whatever projects that are on the horizon, I will be our advocate in Columbus fighting for. But at the same time, we need to be fiscally responsible and look at what we are doing to our nation's future, and we're not just passing the buck down the road.
Ms. Caruso.
So first and foremost, the way that I would approach that is to really delve into that budget. As I mentioned, I did get a degree in accounting, and although I don't actively pursue that at the moment, there is still the background of balancing and balance statements and income statements and debits and credits. And so I will make myself as familiar as possible with that budget. I will rely on experts that are knowledgeable with it to help me understand it. I will work with community members to see how the budget connects with them. And yes, we definitely need to make sure our budget is balanced. That is something that is ingrained with me, even in my own personal budget, is to make sure that I am not spending more than I'm able to cover. And that is the same thing with our state budget. I will work with community members, with community advocates, to see how we can support the members of the 83rd District. How can we support our local small businesses at the state level to provide them the support that they need? And yes, we do need to be good stewards of all of our dollars. And that is important, to be fiscally responsible. And I will spend time making sure that I understand that and support the best services possible for all involved in the 83rd.
Mr. Matthews, you mentioned out of control spending, the words that you use. Can you identify either a specific line item or even a category of spending, of state spending, that you would seek to drastically reduce or even eliminate? We'll begin with Mr. Matthews.
Specifically within the state, I believe we need to look at freezing Medicaid. That's one of the things that we need to look at. We need to stop the government expansion. We need to look at how we can be more efficient. Let's look at the budget. And we're going to have to look at, because the revenues are short this year, is where are we going to cut? If we're going to make a balanced budget next General Assembly, we are going to have to cut to balance it. So definitely looking at different areas and working alongside our community leaders like Treasurer Walton here, the county treasurer, of what we can as a county accept on and cut, but also at the state level, looking at other ways we can make state government more efficient.
And Ms. Caruso.
So I'll be honest, I don't know all of the line items in the state budgets. And so I can't necessarily tell you exactly which one I would decrease or which one I would eliminate. But what I would honestly tell everyone is that I would look at it all very critically and determine with my colleagues on both sides of the aisle what would be the best moving forward for the Ohioans. My opponent talks about Medicaid. Medicaid is for those who barely make minimum money. So why would we want to freeze that to help them improve their health, improve their status? And so that is definitely an area that I would not necessarily say freeze, but definitely something for us to really look at critically and see how we can help our community members who need it the most, because that is what Medicaid is for.
Part of the exchange last night from our candidate forum featuring Democrat Sheila Caressel and Republican Ty Matthews in the race for the 83rd district seat in the Ohio House of Representatives. Through the course of the hour-long discussion, there was some lively debate between the two candidates on various budget issues, social programs. We talked about economic development and infrastructure spending, education issues, the Reproductive Rights Amendment, and the issue of abortion. Even the candidates discussed their thoughts on issue one. On the ballot, which is the redistricting ballot initiative, not necessarily directly tied to the race for the 83rd itself, but both candidates discussed that during their closing statements of the forum last night. It was a very lively discussion, and just looking at the posts afterwards on social media, it seems that the supporters of each candidate were very happy with the way their side performed or their candidate performed in last night's forum. But if you did not catch it yesterday evening, you can go back and watch the entire forum in its entirety, the WFIN Facebook page. We have the link to the video of the forum at our webpage this morning. Go to goodmornings.net. And check that out. Again, the early voting November election begins next week, and Election Day, just a little over a month away. So the Findlay Municipal Court, very soon, coming up later this month, be holding another DUS Day clinic for anyone with a suspended driver's license. It's a chance to help you resolve those issues, get you back on the road legally. Findlay Municipal Court judges Alan Hackenberg and Stephanie Bishop are with us in the studio this morning. Thank you very much for dropping by, as always. So DUS Day, driving under suspension, those who have that issue on their record, this is an opportunity to sort of clear the site and start over, basically, right?
Correct, it is. It's an opportunity for individuals that have some sort of a suspension. There's numerous different ways that you can have a license suspension, mm-hmm. but it's an opportunity for individuals to come to the court, and the court can help them to either obtain a valid license or at least get driving privileges or give them a roadmap of what they need to do to potentially get valid in the future.
So you mentioned that there are a number of ways that this could happen. Do they always involve the courts if you lose your driving privileges?
No. Quite often the BMV is the agency that ends up suspending your license, usually for not having proof of insurance when you had some kind of interaction, either in an accident or a traffic ticket.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you can get your license suspended by the BMV. If you accumulate more than 12 points, you can get your license suspended by the BMV. If someone gets a civil judgment against you and then turns into the BMV, and they'll suspend your license under a security suspension.
Hmm.
So, and then obviously you can get suspended if you don't pay the reinstatement fees, because every time your license gets suspended by the BMV, they want a fee.
Yeah.
So if you don't pay the fee, then you're under a reinstatement fee suspension.
So even if the suspension has come about not directly through the courts, you can still help in resolving those issues?
Correct. There's different steps that individuals are overwhelmed and have no understanding of what they need to do. And so there will be representatives from the BMV available that day, as well as court staff that can help an individual figure out what those steps are. But so, even if the court is not the one that suspended their license, we can still assist them with trying to figure that out.
I think that's important to point out, because I can hear some folks saying, well, you know, that's great, but my particular situation didn't involve the courts, and
correct.
You can still help.
If it's our court suspension, if it's a BMV suspension, we can help you out, or at least get you on a road to getting back to a valid status or with privileges. If it's from another court, then we're not going to be able to help that individual.
So for
that,
another jurisdiction,
yes,
or another state,
yes,
or something along those lines.
Correct.
So and again, we've pointed this out before, and I think it's important to also emphasize this isn't a waiving of penalties or a quote unquote get out of jail free card. There's still going to be some. Now you are waiving court fees.
Yes, we will waive our. If you need to open up a case, we call those an OTH case to get privileges. Generally speaking, we are waiving the $60 fee that day for that. And if you have your license suspended by the court because you haven't been paying on your fines and court costs, or you've got a registration block because you haven't been paying your fines and court costs, you can come in. We'll release that license forfeiture suspension or the block as long as you sign up for a new payment plan with the court and make a payment typically. So okay. That's what we'll do.
So, but the underlying issue has to be resolved.
Correct. And sometimes, well, most of the time, individuals have numerous different types of suspensions. It's not just one. And so there's various different things that are necessary, whether you need to get an SR-22 bond, set up a reinstatement fee plan or whatnot. And so the staff can assist with giving them those steps that need to be taken in order to get back to either valid or at least get driving privileges.
As you mentioned, sometimes there are multiple issues that you have to sort through.
Usually there are, actually, because an individual that maybe didn't show proof of insurance for a date of a traffic ticket ends up under a non-compliance suspension. Well, they might have ended up with a court suspension that they didn't pay a reinstatement fee for, so then they have a reinstatement fee. Yes, it snowballs. It definitely snowballs.
Yeah.
So.
One of the things that you mentioned is that even if the entire issue is not resolved on this particular day, you can generally provide some limited driving privileges so people can kind of get to work or whatever they need to do.
Right. If we can't get them back to valid status, we will try to get them at least privileges to drive while their license is under suspension. If we can't do that for whatever the reason is, we'll at least give them the steps on what they need to do so they can at least come back at some point in time for and the privileges and or to get that valid license from the BMV.
How often, I would imagine that just knowing that there is an end in sight, like you were mentioning, these things snowball and can get out of control and you can feel like buried under this. Just being able to see the light at the end of the tunnel, I would imagine, is one of the things that many people...
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, certainly if I was under water and looking up and saying, how do I get out from this? And someone's, throws me that life preserver and I grab onto it and say, hey, there's a path forward here. Yeah. So I can get this done. So
give us the details. As we mentioned, this latest DOS clinic is coming up later this month, right?
It is. It's going to be on October 10th, and the hours are 9 o'clock to 4 o'clock PM. If you want to make an appointment, that certainly is helpful, but walk-ins are welcome as well. If you would like to make an appointment, you can contact the clerk's office. The phone number is 419-424-7141.
And what all would someone need when they come in that day, then? What should people be prepared for?
So it's not necessary for them to bring anything, but typically there's some payment that may be required in order to lift some of the different types of suspension. So a form of payment is always certainly helpful. Otherwise, if they have proof of insurance for the vehicle for the for now, that would be helpful, because then if they're trying to get driving privileges, we do need to verify that they do have proof of insurance. Mm-hmm. If they're wanting driving privileges for employment, then verification of proof of employment, so a pay stub or something from their employer indicating that they're employed.
So this would be something you would not necessarily have to come in with an attorney or anything of that nature.
Right. Unlike sort of like our Safe Surrender Day, where you may have a pending case and need your attorney there to help get it resolved, no attorneys are necessary. Most of these issues certainly don't need or require an attorney when you're just trying to get your license
back. You're
not
adjudicating a case.
Right. No. These are just suspensions, and we're just trying to help them. There's no really – I mean, there could be someone who had an active case. Maybe they failed to appear for a traffic matter. Their license was suspended because they didn't appear. But simply appearing in court, we'll lift that suspension, and we can worry about how to resolve the case down the road. But that suspension would then be lifted, so they don't have to worry about – trying to drive under suspension while that case is pending. So.
Yeah. Ultimately, again, sort of like the you know, the other clinics that you do where people have warrants out or something, this is – people are driving under suspension and risking even further problems. This is an opportunity to sort of, you know,
stop
put that
it.
Wall up and stop that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Most of the time when an individual doesn't have a valid license, they don't have proof of insurance. So when they're driving, one, whatever suspension they're ultimately charged with driving under, it could be another license suspension, could be mandatory or possible. In addition, they'll end up with a non-compliance suspension because they didn't show proof of insurance because they probably don't have proof of insurance if they're not valid to drive.
About, so the snowball. Snowball.
So the snowball,
Yeah, this is a program we're trying to be proactive so they don't have to come see us on a Tuesday or a Thursday for our traffic agreement sessions. So.
Again, the date for the DUS Day clinic is coming up on the 10th. Right?
It is, correct.
And how do folks make an appointment? Again, that's you can walk in, but if you can make an appointment, that makes it easier for everyone.
Yep. Contact the clerk's office. The phone number is 419-424-7141.
Okay. And we have a link up for more information at the municipal court website as well. If you go to goodmornings.net, get more details there. Again, Judges Alan Hackenberg, Stephanie Bishop with us this morning. Thanks very much for dropping
Thanks
by.
Thanks for having us on again. Thank you.
But I want to dedicate this, oh my goodness, to the musical theater department at the University of Michigan School of Music, Theater, and Dance. My education there as a young person changed my life forever. My professors, my classmates, they instilled in me an appreciation for what it is to be an artist and what it is to be lucky to be a part of this incredible community. If you're out there and you have money, and I know a lot of you in this room have a lot of it, start a scholarship. Change someone's life the way that Art and Marty Herron changed mine.
That is Gavin Creel.
Henry, I love you so much.
Accepting the 2017 Tony Award for his portrayal of Cornelius Hackle in the revival of Hello, Dolly! On Broadway. The Findlay native passed away yesterday after a brief battle with cancer. An alum of Findlay High School and the Findlay First Edition, he attended college at the University of Michigan and made a significant name for himself on the Great White Way, including that Tony Award for his role in Hello, Dolly! Also picked up an Olivier Award along the way as well. Back in 2006, just as his career was really starting to take off, and he got that first Tony nomination for Thoroughly Modern Millie, we spoke to him about life in show business and his first Tony nomination for that musical.
In just a few years, you have already amassed quite an impressive resume.
I've been very, very fortunate.
Are you surprised at all at how quickly it has come?
Yes. I went to school at University of Michigan for 4 years and studied it pretty intensely, and went to London and studied for a semester. And you know, there's no one way to get to this crazy business, and I'm constantly evolving and learning new stuff. But I got to tell you, I'm glad it didn't take me too long, because I have a pretty short attention span. So,
because I know there are an awful lot of people who, you know, go to New York and have these dreams and toil for a long time get at, you know, half of what you have had in just the number of years that you've been there.
Yeah, it's one of those professions where you it's a crapshoot, and you could go there and you could work your tail off for years and years and not even get a chorus part in some show off Broadway or whatever, or you can go and be the next overnight sensation. It's kind of the maddening and exciting thing about the business.
So when you leave, and I mean, going back to your days at Findlay High School, you graduate and you go on to the University of Michigan, and then you decide, okay, this is what I'm going to do as a career. Does that thought ever enter your mind that maybe this works, maybe it doesn't?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you accept it, you have to accept that the failure is on the flip side of the coin of success. So you're like, you know. But I don't flip that coin over very often, Chris. I'm just sort of like, you know, if there's a possibility that I could get something, then I'll go for it. And there's always a possibility that you won't. But it's sort of a waste of energy to concentrate on that kind of stuff. And it's paid off so far, you know. I'm not saying I've been auditioning, you know, recently for a pretty big show that's happening coming up in New York. And, you know, it's maddening because you don't know whether or not it's going to happen, and you know, you just sort of, it's a crapshoot. So it always is.
So a Tony Award nomination is no guarantee.
No, not at all. It's just a nice thing to say. Oh, that's nice. Next, you know.
Yeah. Although that's got to be quite an honor. I mean, what a great show Thoroughly Modern really is, and to be nominated with the kind of folks that you were up there with,
John Lithgow and John McMartin and John Cullum and Patrick Wilson, who's becoming a pretty big movie star now. It was my first Broadway show, and during previews of that show, I've told the story 1,000 times, but I blew my knee out during previews before the official opening, and I wasn't even sure if I was going to be able to get up on, you know, two legs to perform. And I had a great surgeon, Philip Bauman, totally put me back together, and 2 weeks later I was on stage again. And it's sort of a miracle that when that Tony nomination came through, I was sort of like, what? Oh yeah, great, awesome, that's fantastic. But I'm walking, everybody, look, my knee works. You know?
That was the bigger thing at the time.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I can imagine, yeah. I can imagine. So
don't get me wrong, though, that Tony nomination was pretty big.
I can imagine.
I'm very honored.
Flashback to 2006, part of our conversation with a very young Gavin Creel about life and show business, his first Tony nomination for Thoroughly Modern Millie. Just a few months ago, he announced that he had been diagnosed with a rare cancer, metastatic melanotic peripheral nerve sheath sarcoma. He passed away at his home in Manhattan. Gavin Creel was 48 years old, and certainly thoughts and prayers with his family. What a tremendous legacy he leaves behind in just a very short amount of time.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
Now, this is not what you want to discover when you are renovating your home. This from the international file of the broken news. A Frenchman was renovating his cellar. Okay? I don't know if he's French, so I'm assuming he was putting in a wine cellar. You know? I don't know that for sure, but I'm guessing, just because he's French, probably putting in a wine cellar. So redoing his basement when he discovered a 1,000-year-old grave site. And not just one, 38 graves, and a number of skeletal remains were uncovered in his basement. Discovered it was a lost cemetery reportedly used between the 3rd and 10th centuries A.D. Whoa! You got a little poltergeist thing going on here. The skeletons will be analyzed so that their gender, age, and living conditions can be determined. Experts say this is a very valuable archaeological find, but I'm thinking this guy is, I just want my basement back. I just want my basement. It doesn't say, the story doesn't say how long he's been living at this home, how long he's been living in this house built on top of an ancient graveyard. But, not the thing you want to discover when you're renovating your home. They don't tell you about that at Lowe's when they're selling you on home renovations. That's not the part that they tell you about. Wow. Elsewhere in the broken news, an 81-year-old man from Montana is facing jail time, possibly, probably not, but he could be facing jail time for illegally cloning a large sheep. illegally cloning a sheep. Arthur Schubarth is facing possible jail time, fines up to $250,000. After he reportedly successfully cloned an endangered giant Marco Polo sheep, which he named his new hybrid the Montana Mountain King. Mr. Schubarth admitted that he cloned the sheep and he was planning on using the clone to create a hybrid species here in the United States that would be more valuable for hunting. He wanted to create an extremely large sheep that he and others could then hunt. According to Mr. Shubarth in a statement, I got my normal mindset clouded by my enthusiasm, and I was looking for any gray area in the law to create the best sheep I could for this sheep industry. The investigation into his co-conspirators is ongoing. Prosecutors reportedly are not seeking prison time, but he could face some very stiff fines. And no word on what will happen to the cloned sheep. Create a giant sheep for hunting. The Montana Mountain King. All right. Is something you do in your spare time. Cloning animals in your spare time, not a hobby that you should engage in, as it turns out. They frown on that. Let's see. Elsewhere in the broken news, Dateline Waterbury, Vermont, where a suspect has been arrested and charged with stealing a painting from a fine arts center. Now, we've had unusual thefts before, but this is a little weird. Police say that a painting valued at around $2,500 was stolen from the Sir Richard's Antiques and Fine Arts Center. Employees were able to provide information about the suspect's vehicle, and the suspect was arrested a short distance away. His name, and this really jumped out at me, in the story, the name of the person who's charged with stealing this painting from the Fine Arts Center, Perry Mason. Perry Mason. Anybody know a good lawyer who he might be able to hire? Just saying. He is charged with grand larceny. The painting was seized by state police. Well, Perry Mason's going to need a good lawyer in Vermont. I couldn't make that up. That is really his name, Perry Mason. An unusual story out of Bel Air, California, where all the rich people live. Apparently, a mansion, a Bel Air mansion, listed for $21.5 million, is on the market for $21.5 million, got tagged by graffiti artists inside and out. Apparently, from the roof to the ground. Graffiti artists did their work all over this mansion, both inside and out. The realtor tells local news reporters that the house was completely tagged. Culprits still unknown. It is not the first time a high-end property in the area has been hit with graffiti. It is, however, the first time in 3 years that they have had such reports. But here is the kicker in the story. The vandalism doesn't matter to the people who are purchasing this mansion for $21.5 million. And they don't care that it was filled with graffiti. The reason? The buyers are planning on tearing it down anyway. Tearing it down and building a new mansion. $21.5 million. And they're just going to tear it down. So we don't care if it was tagged. Wow. Man, I'd like to have that kind of money. Buy a $21.5 million graffiti-filled mansion. I don't care. I'm just going to tear it down anyway. Build something new. Wow. And finally, in the broken news this morning, an 81-year-old fashion model in South Korea has come up short in her bid to become the oldest Miss Universe contestant. Choi Soon-hwa, age 81, is vying to become the oldest Miss Universe contestant ever. The pageant, which up until this year had been limited to contestants between the ages of 18 and 28, lifted their age restriction to make the competition more modern and diverse, according to a report in the Associated Press. Ms. Choi was actually a finalist in the competition at age 81 from South Korea. And although she did not win, she did take home the honor of best dresser in the competition. Even at this age, she tells the Associated Press, even at this age, I had the courage to grab onto an opportunity and take on a challenge. I want people to look at me and realize that you can live healthier and find joy in life when you find things you want to do and challenge yourself to achieve that dream. Wow! She may not have won, but she's still a winner in my book. I love that. 81 years old. I would have voted for her. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
And yet another major brand just announced it's halting all social media advertising.
The two most overused and abused words in advertising are truth and trust. They are the two most precious commodities for all brands, big and small. As an advertiser, you have to trust your partners to protect your brand's truth using the media consumers trust. Radio, it's on.
This message provided by WFIN.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. When was the last time that you truly treated yourself to something special? Splurging on travel is one of Americans' favorite ways to do something special for themselves. In a new poll of 2,000 Americans, 82% say having a little luxury while you're on vacation is a great way to, you know, to do something special for yourself. 82% say a little luxury on vacation is a good thing. When asked what luxuries they aspire to include in a dream vacation, the number one thing is 50% of the respondents say staying at a high-end hotel is a great way of treating yourself to a little luxury on vacation, staying at a high-end hotel. The rest of the top three luxuries while traveling, having incredible views from their hotel, from the hotel room. Now, whether it's a luxury hotel or not, a room with a great view, 42%. So that is a nice little luxury that you can have for yourself. It usually costs a little bit more for a great view. Flying first class to the to your destination instead of just, you know, crowding yourself into coach, fly first class, splurge a little. 42% said that's a great way of adding a little luxury to your dream vacation. And also making the top 10 was a chance to try something new or unexpected during your vacation. 30% cited that as a way to splurge, do something special, have a little luxury on vacation. For those who would splurge on specific things, where they're staying would be the top purchase, 55%. That was followed by spending on food, 53%. Say a fine meal is a great way of treating yourself on vacation. The destination itself, where you go, maybe someplace exotic, 34% said the place that you go, the destination, is a great luxury. Americans would also be willing to splurge on how long they're staying, 33%, and the travel itself, 25%. Again, flying first class or whatever it might happen to be. And the average luxurious vacation, according to the respondents, would last 7 days. I would think if you're going to go, you know, all out on a luxurious dream vacation, you'd probably want it to last more than 7 days, right? But that was the average, which I thought was kind of interesting. And this is the big kicker in the poll. Despite all of this talk about treating yourself, doing a little something extra, splurging on a luxurious dream vacation, according to the poll, 1/5 of all Americans, 17%, say that they have never experienced luxury. They've never done that. We've got all these grand ideas, but too many of us just don't do it. Something to think about there. So happening around town this weekend is something we always look forward to. It is the Christmas in October Craft Show at the Old Mill Stream Fairgrounds. And Judy Cloud is with us once again. Hard to believe this has been more than three decades that this has been going on. And it just seems like it gets bigger and better every year.
Well, putting it that way, that's kind of a little three decades.
I don't mean to make you feel old or anything.
I know. But yeah, that's...
When you started this, could you have imagined that it would be still going on 35 plus years later, however many years it's been now?
I had a vision.
Yeah.
And I kind of stuck with that vision.
Mm-hmm.
It's been through a lot of different things to get to this point. But,
sure.
And
you know,
grow.
One of the things, all of the recent improvements at the fairgrounds and the new buildings that have gone up and all of that. I mean, we talk with the folks at the fair while we're there at the fair, but they benefit, those improvements benefit events like the craft show tremendously. It's got to make it so much more enjoyable for you, for the vendors, for everyone.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. The latest of the three buildings, I mean, they're just... They're wonderful, and the gentlemen that do a lot of the work on the grounds, they just are doing an amazing job. The grounds is really set up right now for the show, which is wonderful.
Yeah. So how long does it take to put together a show like this? Because there are, I mean, literally hundreds of vendors that come in to participate in this show.
I can't put a time frame on that, but it does take a lot of time. I have a lot of people in the office that work for me. and we start from 1 year to the next.
Yeah.
So this,
you're just rolling right on.
We're just rolling already into next year. So many things have changed, too.
And I know that for a lot of vendors, I mean, they'll reserve their spots for the next year, you know, even before this year's show is done. Because that speaks volumes to the kind of show, the quality of show that it is.
Yes, that's one thing we started many, many years ago.
Yeah.
It does. It helps because then we know what we're looking at for the next year.
Mm-hmm,
and,
sure.
You know,
yeah.
People that can do it like to know they're going to be there again the next year.
Yeah. So people come from all over for the Christmas in October craft show. It's certainly a lot of folks from the community, but, you know, even outside the community, they come in for this over the course of the 2 days.
We've had people. Excuse me. We've had people from Florida. We've had people
wow.
from California, of course, Pennsylvania, Indiana,
sure.
And Canada. We have a
wow.
fun group from Canada that comes down.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That is awesome. Okay. So first of all, let's get the details. It is happening Saturday and Sunday, right?
It's happening Saturday and Sunday. On Saturday morning, we have what's called the early bird. That's from 8 to 10.
Mm-hmm.
That's so you can get in and get parked and start your shopping.
Yeah.
You know, little less people during that time. And then general admission starts at 10 o'clock.
Okay.
And goes till 5. And then Sunday is 11 to 4. And Saturday, if you see something Saturday and you want to come back Sunday, make sure you get your hand stamped.
Okay.
If you bought tickets online, sometimes we can look at that as well, too, to see that from the day before.
So, there's plenty to see. You can definitely spend an afternoon. And as you said, I'm sure a lot of folks will come back both days and check it out. So,
oh, definitely. Yeah. We have we're in like 10 buildings right now.
Wow.
We have like 9 buildings. Well, one I call the 2 buildings. It's CD.
Okay.
But that's because we used to have 2 buildings there. So
gotcha. And there are too many to, you know, get into specific types of stuff. But really, just about anything that you could imagine is represented. And that's, I would imagine for you, that's kind of fun, too, to just see, you know, the variety of things that people come up with, these crafters, these artisans to present for sale.
Variety is one of the key things. And trying to have a correct and a balance, you know, so there's different things, something for everybody.
Yeah.
We don't want to forget the food either.
Absolutely. I was going to say.
Yeah. We have close to a couple dozen different food vendors out there, from, you know, your munchies to your salad, you know, type things, your subs.
You can just come out to eat.
You can just come out to eat,
and then yep. The crafts and everything else is just a bonus. So.
Correct. Yeah, we have entertainment. There's a lot of tables at the fairgrounds now, so to sit down and eat.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see a lot of this information and get more details if you look at our online at our show news.
Okay.
It's a 36-page tab with stories on our exhibitors. It has maps.
That's cool.
It has coupons, and it's also around in different businesses.
So you may see that out there. That is kind of cool that you actually have a lot of the stories from the various vendors. Kind of share, you know, what they do and why they do it and how they got into it, that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. We send them something and ask them to, you know, give us some ideas and things like that. And then,
very cool.
I have a young lady that then takes it and writes it, and
that is awesome.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, and we have our business cards in here from all our advertisers.
Okay.
Crafters.
Yeah. Yeah.
Quite a few of them put them in, and there's a contest with that. So you just got to read the show news to find out all the different things.
You mentioned that folks can find that online as well.
Yes, they can at our website, www.cloudshows.biz. It's B-I-Z.
Okay. And again, Christmas in October. And by the way, you know, it's Christmas in October. You can get a lot of seasonal stuff, but not correct. Just Christmas stuff. I mean, there's
correct.
Stuff for all of the seasons.
All of the seasons, yeah. And then not seasons. Just things that for
I know,
gifts. And
I know we have gone, my wife and I have gone in the past and gotten our Christmas shopping started. This is one of those things where you will invariably be able to find something for that impossible to buy for person on your list.
I totally agree with that.
Yeah.
That's a definite.
And everybody's, and everybody's got one of those people on their list.
Right. And then, too, if you see something that you're going, oh, you better get it, because there's another person thinking about it, too, especially if it's right. a one-of-a-kind thing.
Well, you know, here's the other thing, too, and again, it's something that we have done. You mentioned that in the show news, a lot of the vendors will have their business cards. They'll all have their business cards and contact information there at the show. So if you see something, maybe you're not ready to buy it right then, or, you know, whatever, you can still reach out to many of these vendors later on and make
we get a lot of calls and emails and,
right.
you know, people contacting us after the event so that, you know, they saw something, they want something, and they're like picking my brain so we can send them the information. Usually we come up with who they're looking for.
Yeah.
So
it's happening this weekend at the Hancock County Fairgrounds, again, Saturday from 10 to 5, Sunday from 11 to 4, and if folks want tickets, you can get admission there at the gate, right?
Correct. For the general admission, you can get at the gate.
Okay.
You can get it online, which just helps make things go a little faster.
Right.
When we're trying to get people parked and everything.
Sure.
And early bird.
Yeah. How do we
get those?
Okay.
Online.
Okay. So online. Online for the early bird. And that starts Saturday morning at
8 o'clock.
At 8 o'clock. Okay. So if you're want to get out there, get first pick, that is the way to do it. We've got a link on our webpage for more information about the Christmas in October Old Mill Stream Craft Show happening this weekend. Judy Cloud with us this morning. Judy, thanks very much for dropping by the preview. Look forward to it.
Thank you.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. And remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage, goodmornings.net. Coming up tomorrow on the program, it brings unprecedented opportunities, but also unprecedented risks. The power of disruptive technologies. The subject of this year's 23rd Annual Information Assurance Forum at the University of Findlay. We'll get a preview. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.